Hilliard Lyons is proud to become a part of Baird, a trusted financial services firm that shares our commitment to the community. I'm Jeff Main, branch manager with Hilliard Lyons. You can learn more about Baird and our new partnership at HilliardToBaird.com.
Every Tuesday, just after 4:05, we check in at City Hall, Keith, and our guest is...
We have the mayor of the city of Bloomington, John Hamilton.
Mayor Hamilton, good afternoon. How are you?
I am well. Good afternoon to you both. I hope you're doing okay.
We're doing great.
August.
Everybody's here. August is here. The doors are open at Ivy Tech and Indiana University, so our fair village is swelled up by, 45 or 50,000 people, and away we go for the school year. And you had a busy week last week, and I know you have thousands of things on your plate, but there's not much busier time for government than organizing budgets and getting that all together. You had four meetings last week. Just give us a recap of how you felt everything went and a timeline for where we go from here.
Sure, that is a busy week, and as you would know, it's many weeks ahead of it and many weeks after it, but last week was the about 21 or 2 hours of city council meetings when they heard from 19 different department heads and me talking about the 2021 budget and plans for that. We, in Indiana law, the mayor proposes a budget and the county has to review it. They can cut it. They can't expand it, but they can cut it, and they have about 2 months to do that. So we'll have some back and forth. You know, it was basically a message that says these are extraordinary times. We do face some budget pressures ahead. We know we're tightening our belt. I've averaged about 7 or 8 new positions a year for the last several years in city government. That's about a 1% increase, reflecting we have about a 1% population increase. We have, you know, various many new things that happen. This year I asked for 1.5 FTEs, so much smaller, tightening our budget. We had to cut a bunch of things we'd like to do, and we're actually spending some of our reserves. You know, the city has built up very strong what we call rainy day reserves. And I said, this is a rainy day. It's time to use those so that we can continue to provide the city services. Actually also added a couple $1 million of specific investments to help the community recover, to help us move forward, help the business community, help the nonprofits, help the social service entities, help the infrastructure work that we can do to go ahead with that. So I was very pleased with it. The council's very patient and persistent, hanging in on 4 consecutive nights. At the same time, I was trying to do the Democratic National Convention later at night after that, because I'm a delegate this year, so I didn't get to go to Milwaukee, but I felt like I ought to be watching that. So it was a busy week.
A very busy week, no doubt. And one of the areas that everybody is talking about, obviously, that we saw the rally downtown on Saturday about funding police and funding local law enforcement, the simple math equation would be if our population is increasing yearly 1% or so as it is, why isn't the public safety going in that same direction? I'll let you address that.
Sure. And we actually have been and continue to be doing so. In my 5th budget, we have been adding police officers per year. The police budget has grown pretty significantly. The percent is certainly double digits in the last several years. And we actually created a new funding source for police and fire back in 2016, which some people may not remember, but we passed a 0.25% income tax to pay directly for public safety, and we've invested millions of dollars in that. This year, it was an unusual year, and here I'll tell you how I approached it. I'm really very proud of our police department and the people who work in it, who protect us every day. It's an incredible set of professionals. I swear each one in as a new police officer in front of their families and fellow officers, and it's an important and sober occasion, reminding us of how much they put on the line every day. We have 95 police officers, and we have right now 105 authorized positions. The reason we have 10 vacancies is, despite our best efforts to continue to hire and recruit and train, through attrition, through movement, through retirements, and frankly, in the last 5 years, all across the country, it's harder to hire police officers. It's very difficult. You can imagine the attraction of becoming a police officer has evolved, and We're really proud of the people we have. But as I looked at next year, there was really no forecast under which we would add more than five net officers. And so what I decided to do was to go from 95 to 100. What I decided to do was reallocate money for five officers, if you will, positions 101 through 105, to say, well, we can hire five new officers net over the next year, but we could also probably hire five new non-officer positions like a social worker and a neighborhood resource specialist, which is what we did in the budget. So we actually have 10 positions that we will be able to fill, I think, over the next year to help the police continue to provide the services that they do. Well, also being sensitive to, no doubt, there is indeed racial history to every police department in the country. We have to pay attention to that, listen to that, make sure we're working with our community. And these new positions can also help create new linkages between the department and the public. So those are the steps that we proposed. The council had some questions, different views, and certainly the public has different views about different ways to approach this. But public safety is a fundamental responsibility of a mayor. I take it very seriously. I'm very proud of what our police force does, as well as our fire department. It's also really important that the public have confidence in, connections with, relationships to the police department. We're going to keep working on that.
We're speaking with the mayor of the city of Bloomington, John Hamilton. And Mr. Mayor, for the great unwashed public, that's me, help me on, you said something in the budget thing I thought was kind of interesting. You made your presentation. The council can lower something. They can't add anything. But now you're here and they're there. Do you modify based on anything they've said? Can you come back and add? Could you add, or neither of you can add now? That's one question.
Yes. I can take that on. Unlike the federal government, where Congress initiates, the House of Representatives has to initiate the budget and spending bills. And under Indiana state law, in a second-class city like this, the mayor presents the budget, and the council can reduce amounts in the budget but cannot increase them. Now, what the council can do is say, hey, mayor, if you don't increase this, we're not going to vote for it. They have the authority to reject a budget, or we're going to cut some part of the budget that you don't want us to cut. So there's certainly back and forth. That began actually in April as we met months ago to do what's called a budget advance and start talking about what are they interested in, what are we thinking about. There's a lot of back and forth over the coming weeks, and they certainly can come, and we do discuss, and they can propose, hey, why don't you do this? I can come back to them with a budget that's adjusted either up or down in any place. It's just that my proposal, they cannot increase it. They can only decrease it.
So now at this point, is there a kind of a negotiations aspect that goes on where they meet, they do something, then do you get together informally or formally and say, okay, now let's talk about this particular thing. What do you recommend? And then have a discussion to come up with a new number or a lower number?
Those discussions can happen among individual council members and me or some together. Anytime there's a substantive discussion about the budget with any five or more council members, that's a public meeting. So there are some discussions that take place among and between individuals or small numbers. But generally, the next discussion will be late in September when I will present the actual appropriation ordinance. And then once that starts, that ordinance really can only be cut by them, and it has to be passed by October in order to get through the Indiana budget processes.
Now, let's talk about something else that you actually were a part of over the weekend. There was a demonstration downtown on Kirkwood between Walnut and College. It got at times heated, and I was watching part of it, and one of the things they said, well, let's go to the mayor's house. So I saw a picture, and they came to your house. What do you make of what happened?
Well, as I often say, Bloomington has a long history and a proud history of First Amendment demonstrations and people showing up to advocate for what they believe, and that includes lots of different people. And one of those was Saturday night, which was essentially a pro-police, a defend-the-police self-identified group that wanted to stand and be heard on that. They had a rally downtown. I tell you, I'm relieved. There were conflicts, including some physical fisticuffs and combinations that were concerning. There were a lot of firearms downtown that people brought, which is of great concern when you have emotions high and tempers high and the heat high, and really bad things can happen in a flash. So I appreciate that the law enforcement and the people there did not get worse, but it is always tense to see that happen. And look, you know, that's the way America works. You can get together and express your views. It was a little unusual. They came to my house, a set of, I don't know, a couple dozen or so, roared up on motorcycles and vehicles and blocked some traffic, and had a PA system that was set up pretty quickly to kind of call out to me and tell me a few things. I was in my house with my family, and it's unusual. That's the first time I've had that demonstration in my 5 years as mayor like that. I did have one other time that people talked about it, but they didn't end up doing it. And it's you know, look, I'm a public servant, and I'm paid to represent people. I do kind of point out that usually when you're protesting, you're trying to arrange a way to change policies and sit down and talk and advocate for changes where changes can happen. And I haven't had any of them ask to meet with me. And every week I have an hour when I'll meet with anybody, at least once a year, if anybody wants to come in and talk to me about anything. And I'm open to talking to anybody about any of these topics. But sometimes it seems like the demonstrations are the purpose in themselves. But everybody was calm. It lasted about 20 minutes, and then they decided, I think their organizers helped convince them this wasn't really a productive way to try to make their point, so they went back away.
Never a dull moment here in Bloomington. Yeah. Now we've got 45,000 kids back on campus as well. You meet every week, Keith. Well, not you, Keith, but Mr. Mayor does, with a group of leaders from the hospital and emergency management services. How are the tenor of those meetings changed now that we have, more people in your front yard?
Well, you know, the numbers, it's a tale of two cities, right? The overall numbers of 1% incidents that IU has found as they've tested many thousands of students coming back, that's a pretty good number. Our overall positivity rate in Monroe County is half or less of what the state is and the national average. So those are all good things. Our hospitalizations continue to be down. On the other hand, the other side is we see what happened at Michigan State and at Notre Dame and University of North Carolina and other places where we know things can go south very fast. So we're monitoring regularly. We're even monitoring the wastewater now regularly, and looking for numbers, indications of problems. But I did feel, working closely with the county health department and our professionals, some of whom you mentioned, that we should take every step we could to try to avoid the fate of having a resurgence that meant IU had to dramatically change their plans. So that's what prompted me last Friday to lower the number of people allowed in a private social gathering. We had a couple incidents. We didn't want to have these super spreader events happening with dozens or even 100 or more people together in one space where you could have a really bad super spreader event. So we put that in place. We've had a few dozen complaints over the last weekend of larger gatherings, and the police respond. And, you know, we do what we can. There's no perfect solution, but I'm hopeful that we will be able to get through the next few days and weeks with the same kind of numbers that we keep seeing. That would be a good thing.
You had the concert at Switchyard Park. I understand the splash pad's been fixed, so things are starting to look the way you want them to look there.
Good to have a splash pad in a week like this, right, with the heat.
Right. It was
really fun. Sunday night was the first inaugural concert on the main stage, the main performance stage, the big stage with the lawn that can hold thousands of people. And it was the Bloomington Symphony Orchestra, so that was a lot of fun, a local volunteer orchestra. And we just had 150 people allowed, so it was a pretty, it was very well spaced out, I will tell you that. But as I told them, you know, the people who were there 10 years from now or 40 years from now, when you're wobbling around and somebody says, oh, you're going to go down to the, you know, some new band down there with 5,000, say, well, maybe, but I was there the very first day it opened, and it was pretty cool. It was a beautiful setting, a beautiful evening, and it just kind of, you could kind of envision the years going forward that space will be a really special place for a lot of things to happen. So that was a lot of fun.
How difficult was it?
Thanks to the Bloomington Symphony Orchestra for playing.
And how difficult was it to keep, did you have measures in place where you drew circles on the grass for separation? Did you let people just do their own thing and separate themselves? Did you have ushers? How did this all work? Because obviously I wasn't there. I know the answer to all these questions.
Well, we did have a cordon around the area. So there was a flagged rope that said, you know, enter in these couple places. So there was controlled entry. You had to reserve a spot, though we did let people, if we had room, to come in. We had places marked out. There's actually a hard surface right in front of the stage, and we had circles marked out for that. On the grass, I believe, as far as I could tell, we actually didn't need to mark the circles. I mean, you literally could fit 5,000 people in that bowl. So when you have 150 or so, it's pretty easy to make sure everybody's separated, and everybody was masked on their way in and did a great job. And it was fun. People on the swings, you know, who weren't even quite in the area were listening. It was, you could hear the chattering of splash pad behind you and the playing of orchestra off in the distance. And it was a really special evening. Very nice. I'll give you a heads up too. I think we're going to open another part of the park later this week and Friday. I don't even know if we've announced it, but you know, just between us, just between us.
We won't tell anyone. Like, go ahead.
Looks like the dog park will open Friday. So lots of news about that.
Then that's a big piece of chicken. If you've walked by or ridden your bike, that dog park is not, that's a, I don't want to say a third, but that's a good hunk of that, of the south end of that park there. That's fenced in and ready to go. And I was kind of wondering when that would be the case. So, we'll
Friday
keep that
afternoon.
On the down.
Look, you know, I think
thanks
we're
for throwing us a bone.
Four-legged friend.
Come on.
We're speaking with the mayor of the city of Bloomington, John Hamilton. And Mr. Mayor, you said something earlier, and I want to go into a little bit of detail on this because I think that what you're doing is magnificent, and I want you to tell us if you know of other cities that are even trying to do this, and that is your utilities department and your waste management is actually analyzing waste, looking for strains of the coronavirus. All this is scientific stuff, which I don't really understand, but how far ahead are we of the curve in Bloomington doing
that? We've learned from others.
We have learned from others. These are science-based approaches that are happening around the country, and Carmel, Indiana, I know, has been doing it. Notre Dame has some scientists who've been involved in it. The Indiana Finance Authority is helping pay for this, so the state has embraced this. It's a 10 or 12 week project to analyze what we can learn. I actually just learned today. So you measure the wastewater coming from toilets and coming from waste streams. We measure it at the plants. We have two wastewater plants, the north side and the south side. And then we have six other locations where you actually lower this analyzer machine into a manhole, down into the sewer. It captures data for 24 hours, and you sample and test it. And I learned today the detection limit that the laboratories can do is 10 copies of the gene. So literally the gene of the virus can be detected 10 copies per 100 milliliters of liquid or materials. That's 3 or 4 ounces or so. And they can find 10 individual copies of the gene. And what you're looking for is how much is in there. We'll start to get data. It's kind of experimental. But in particular, if one of those six locations spikes up and shows a lot more than others, it'll make us think, well, we can take some action about that. We can be concerned that there's more infections in this area than others. So we'll keep people posted on that. It's experimental, but we're trying to get information however we can to watch for resurgence of the infection.
And it's brilliant where you can find where you can narrow it down to where it comes from.
Right.
That's just that's way out of my pay grade, Keith. That's pretty cool. But trying to get ahead of it, then you know where contact tracing can start before it even starts, and that's what you're trying. You're never going to get a stopped or a completely ahead of it, but you're trying to corral it. Would that be the proper word to use?
Well, yeah, you're trying to find out if, let's just say, for an example, we found a 2 or 3 block area where the incidence spiked. You'd want to let everybody know in that area that you know, let's say you're 3 or 4 times the background level of most of this city. You all ought to be extra careful. You all ought to be sure to get tested right away because there's more of you that are infected, it appears. You all ought to be more careful in quarantining. And if there has been an outbreak and if the testing shows infections, then you can jump right into the contact tracing and the isolation that you need to do. Because all this is about trying to reduce the speed and the width of the spread of the virus. So if we can find it erupted at this apartment complex or this school or this area of town, it helps us narrow in our efforts. So we'll see. Again, all these are cutting the size of gatherings, trying to measure this way. All the universities doing so many things to monitor people daily, thousands of tests, are all just trying to do our best to avoid the bloom that could turn us backwards. So
are you happy?
Got to be patient.
Are you happy with the steps the university has taken for that many people to come back? Do you think they're doing what's necessary above and beyond? Where do you stand with how Indiana University is trying to reintroduce, 40,000 or so people?
I think they're among universities in the country, from what I can tell. They're leaders in the pack in what they're doing. For example, I'm told the University of North Carolina that had the shutdown kind of explicitly decided not to test people. I know the university wanted to be able to have everybody tested before they came back.
Right.
They weren't quite able to do that, but they have the busiest testing site in the state of Indiana is by the football stadium. So they're very active and doing all they can. And, from the city perspective, it's really important to us for IU to be successful. They're our largest economic engine. They're obviously important, critical part of the community, and so many people are connected with that university. We want them to succeed, so we're working together very closely. The police departments are working closely. We had 3 dozen or more complaints over the past weekend about gathering sizes, and IUPD and Bloomington PD have split up the city and geographically, and each responds to different areas to handle those, and thank goodness for all the work they're doing on that. So the collaboration is very strong. None of us knows what's going to happen, and we can't determine the future, but we can try to direct it in the right way.
Mr. Mayor, before we let you go, I got a couple of things after this, but before we let you go, OptumServe, their contract is about up. In the meetings that you have with the health people, have there been any conversations about keeping them around for a while for additional testing?
I understand they're going to stay at least through September, and yes, we are looking at options for that, whether Optum continues or whether we stand up locally some other testing here. So that's still to be determined.
All right. Now, before we let you go, I got to bring your attention to something I know you're really pleased with. 6th Street between Walnut and College.
Patterson Drive. I drove on it today. It was perfect.
Patterson Drive out by the cemetery is spectacular. And Friday night, downtown, Kirkwood, the parklets, it was spectacular. People were having a wonderful time. Kirkwood was full. It's that good. So you got to feel pretty good about some stuff that's happening around here.
Well, I'm happy that the merchants who struggled so much are finding ways to be successful. We certainly want to collaborate with the community to use the space that we have. I love those little parklets. Maybe if we decide that's a good setting, we can get rid of those orange barriers and come up with something that looks a little better. But it's an experiment that seems to go well. I love I love looking down Kirkwood and seeing people filled with tables. It's safer. it's helping people enjoy, you know, we want to be together. We want to hang out. We want to go do things. And so it is nice when we can help people do that. So keep using the parks and the trails. Be nice to each other and enjoy outdoors while the weather lets us do it for the next few months. And we'll hope we'll get this thing behind us.
Yeah, well, it's all we can do is take some personal responsibility, play by the rules, put your mask on, wash your hands, physically distance. It's not that hard. It's not. We've been doing it for 5 months now. We should have a pretty good grip on it. But let's hope we keep moving in the right direction. Thank you so much for your time, as always, Mr. Mayor. And we will speak to you, believe it or not, in September. That sounds weird.
Yeah.
But that's a good weird.
Yeah. There we go. Thanks, guys. Have a good week.
Take care, Mr. Mayor.
Mayor John Hamilton joins us every Tuesday just after 4:05. We get caught up on everything that's happening in city business and plenty to do today, and we always appreciate the mayor's candidness, and he handles all of our questions. So if we're not asking him something you want us to ask him, let us know. Reach out, WGCL Radio on Facebook, or send me an email, glass@WGCLradio.com, and we will handle it.